Hey everyone, and welcome to this Risky Business Soapbox special. My name's Patrick Gray. Soapbox is not our regular weekly show. It is the monthly podcast here at Risky Biz HQ, where vendors pay to come onto the show to talk about what it is that they actually do. And before Eclectic IQ sponsored this edition, to be honest, I really didn't know much about them. All I knew is that their positioning was very much around threat intelligence, which, as regular listeners would know, are two words that are usually followed by derpa derpa on the regular Risky Business podcast. But here's the thing. Eclectic IQ don't sell a blinky light box that receives a creaky old feed of 12-month-old IOCs. They sell their solution to either massive organizations or very high-risk organizations. They could be national cybersecurity centers, entire defense departments, very, very big global enterprises, basically anyone that has an intelligence team and multiple constituent departments or agencies. And they also play in the ultra high risk sectors like defense contracting. The Eclectic IQ platform is not for small organizations. It really is for orgs that have dedicated externally focused intelligence teams. I mean, that could even include organizations like banks. And their play isn't we feed you threat intelligence, it's use our tooling to go get your own threat intelligence, develop a strategy for dealing with that, then distribute the appropriate parts of that strategy or chunks of that strategy out to the relevant people throughout the organization and do that in a way that makes it actionable. I like to think of this approach as killing your own meat, and that's what Eclectic IQ is really all about. They give you the shotgun and a map, the last known locations of the deer, a cool room, and a bunch of cleavers. Delicious. And I say that with apologies to any vegetarians listening. That was probably not a metaphor for you. And of course, if you don't have a massive in-house capability, they have their so-called Fusion Center, where they drive this platform for some of their customers. Anyway, Joep Gomez is our guest. He is the founder and CEO of Eclectic IQ. Prior to founding Eclectic IQ, Joep worked as head of global collection and global intelligence operations at iSight Partners, which was, of course, later on acquired by FireEye. Joep joined me to talk about what it is that Eclectic IQ actually does, and the resulting conversation, I hope, will be interesting to anyone who wants to understand how threat intelligence is developed and disseminated at scale. Here is Joep Gomez.
So let's say you're a large enterprise or a large government and you have a very large control stack already, right? From the IDSs and the log managers and things like that. That's obviously not where we play, it's where we integrate into. So let's imagine that's there. Then on top, we're going to have an analyst enablement stack for, exactly as you describe, security operations, instant response, and intelligence analysis. And I think right now our platform is made for the intelligence analyst in the analyst pool on top of this large control stack. And we're diversifying in the coming 1 or 2 years into other types of analysts like instant responders. For example, for now, we're very much enabling the intel analysts, not so much what happens after detection into the response side of things. That's much better suited for instant response platforms still. But before you know what to detect, before you know what to, let's say, disseminate a report to your executive for, or build a beautiful presentation for a business unit, or prioritize vulnerabilities for a vulnerability team, or get the latest fraud insights to a fraud team, and so forth. I think before that happens, our technology resides with the intel analyst to build that intel out and then disseminate it to all those diversity of people.
So can you walk through what a typical day might look like for someone who's driving this thing?
Actually, we have our own analyst here as well, who's we eat our own dog food in a way that for some organizations take some of that work away from them as a process. It starts with let's say triaging new things that have come in. So an intel repository like ours will have received intelligence overnight from a large diversity of sources that the customer has access to. It might be a low-level technical IOC-based things. It might be high-level actor-related reporting. It might be more strategic kind of landscape reporting. It doesn't really matter. Our platform has the mechanisms to recognize in that information correlation between things of concern to our customers, or it's able to recognize keywords or tags or things like that. Not yet with super machine learning, but definitely with algorithm-based things that try and, let's say, bubble up the things most relevant to our customers. in a task workflow for the morning. And so what they do is we try and help them to qualify that information that's most relevant to them. And so in a way, they look at a report and we'll be able to show them, okay, this report associates with all these things and incidents you had before. It might correlate with this infrastructure out here. It might correlate with this actor, but we're not entirely sure, but it has some overlap there. And we guide him through the process of how do I understand that context? Can he validate those relationships? Can he qualify with confidence some of those correlations? Does he want to add something himself in terms of explanatory intelligence or predictive intelligence on top of what somebody else is providing, as to kind of build out this picture over time during his day? And so
it really is like work a day SOC stuff, right? But you're saying this is, you know, an easier way to do it.
For the SOCs, but then for the intel analysts. So if the SOC is responding to things that have happened in your organization, most of the time, let's say, this is for the human that is completely concerned with what happens outside. So this new actor is out there, this new method is out there, this new family is out there, there's a rumor about this one thing, can we hypothesize around it, and so forth. And it really is the day-to-day workflow tool for them, correct?
So this is really very much about people doing threat intelligence on external groups and trying to track them down and sort of manage investigations, really.
On the one side, manage investigations for sure. And on the other side, manage the, which is really another way of looking at investigations, like open-ended stuff. So most of our customers are of a size where people specialize. So one person or a group of people specializes in critical infrastructure or espionage or electronic crime or hacktivism or something like that. And so we allow them to build this knowledge base that's ever-growing based on things changing on the outside of the organization, as to allow this technology platform to disseminate that new knowledge across the organization and all the security teams that might exist there, among which security operations, but also fraud and risk and red teams, and doesn't really matter. Whoever needs the reality of what's happening outside is what that platform tries to translate for them. You're correct in its positioning, correct? Yep.
So, I know of certain people who work for, you know, companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and these types of organizations usually have a team that likes to keep an eye on certain groups from certain countries, not naming them, China, not naming them. they like to keep an eye on these sorts of things. But I'm wondering, in traditional industry, where else are you seeing a bit of pickup here? I'd imagine banking might be one area where people really want to start getting a handle on what various groups are up to.
For sure. So the highly regulated side or the highly targeted side usually is first. And you do see that in finance a lot, in oil a lot, in those that have a large supply chain on behalf of others like telco a lot. But we also see it now don't go down into kind of healthcare and insurance and things like that, but to a lesser extent. So let's say the finance, the government, the defense would work with a whole team divided into sub-problems that they're tracking, as I was just describing, on espionage or e-crime or critical infrastructure or hacktivism, whereas in smaller organizations, maybe it's 1, 2, 3, or 4 people. Or it's 1, 2, 3, 4 people with multiple hats. But sometimes in the week, they put the hat of the intel analyst on and they spend a few hours thinking about what's happening outside and how to best integrate and translate that knowledge internally.
Is there like a magic number of like team size where you start getting value from doing your own, you know, externally focused intelligence? I mean, because there's an awful lot of commercial companies out there who are doing this type of work already in aggregate, you know, anti-malware companies, EDR companies. You know, at what point do you actually start having to go out and get your own? And I understand if you're making bombs and rockets for the US government or, you know, for whichever government, this is something you might want to be doing because you're a likely SIGINT target. I really understand that. But if you're a typical commercial enterprise, you know, what tips the scales and makes people say, I need this?
I think the two major axes, or two or three major axes. I think the one major axis is how large the diversity of information sources it is that you have. Because the more information sources that you have, the complexer it becomes to deconflict and really derive action out of it. Because there's still too much, let's say, lack of unification on the data side, on the analytics side, to really perform some sort of automated action or direct consumption of a large diversity of sources. So one major axis, when you have too much sources, they'll start to say different things, they'll start to behave differently, they'll start to be structured differently, and you need to spend some time with a person or multiple people to try and structure it in a way that your organization can actually use it. The second axis would be is the diversity of people using it. So oftentimes we think that an Intel analyst mostly is busy with understanding the cyber threat, but in reality, it's mostly busy with translating that back to its stakeholders and the diversity that that might represent. As an example, an average Intel team might have to serve, you know, strategic reporting every month to people that consume presentations. It might be a daily report stream to people like security operators that have to be brought up to speed as a person, as an analyst, on the latest things out there so they can recognize what they're seeing in their day-to-day operation. Or it might go down as technical as, you know, what are the top vulnerabilities we have to patch right now and send that to the vulnerability team. And I think the larger the diversity of those different internal stakeholders, the more work you have in tailoring those sources and let's say compiling and curating them in a way they bring the most value to the organization, which I think where the crux of the industry really resides, which is there's no shortage in abilities to acquire information about bad things or tooling like ours to analyze, you know, in the infinity understanding of what the threat looks like, but it is only as valuable as you can translate it into the organization as to derive value from it. And I think that's a very crucial step we often overlook. It's not just, hey, send these IOCs into a detection system. It's which processes, which humans, in which cadence have to be brought up to speed on what things, and are they really using it on a day-to-day fashion. I think that's where the value really comes from. So mostly it depends on those two axes.
You're talking about the sort of blue teaming everyone wants to do, right? Which is you're sitting there, you've got an intelligence team that are telling you how to best direct your resources. I mean, that's right. You know, that's the situation everyone wants to be in, right?
It does seem so. And I'm very, very positively surprised that that's the intent of quite a lot of organizations and a good subset of those are doing it. You know, day to day, they're translating changes in the threat landscape to what does a business need to do today across all these different security processes that exist, which surprisingly is quite a large diversity of them. And that's great. But you would need, as those stakeholders grow and as those sources grow, something in the middle to help you. And those processes are emerging. Those best practices are emerging. Those competencies are getting more widespread. And so with those three things, let's say advancing, we see more need for a technology to help them be efficient, effective, whatever word you want to give it, but enable them in technology in the process of understanding and translation.
I'm curious to know if any other security vendors actually use your platform to try to identify new threat groups or new techniques that are evolving in threat groups that they're already tracking.
They are, although I can't tell you which ones. And not just us, but I think platforms like us reside in many supply chains that revolve around somehow understanding cyber threat and translating it back into something useful for a specific control or for a process group.
Now, earlier we were talking about like a, this TTP sort of detection, this sort of high-level macro view. And using that to pull out some stuff. Can you think of a case study? Can you think of a case study where either one of your analysts, you know, she might have seen something a little bit weird and gone, hang on, okay, I'm gonna dive into this, and then uncovered something really sort of jaw-dropping? Or you can think of a client that's done something like that. And, you know, what were these things that they noticed? What were these little dots that the platform allowed them to connect? And, you know, what were the results of connecting those dots? Can you give us a sort of concrete case study?
One great example is a combination of us and the customer, but using our technology. I think it goes across, let's say, four layers. So the first was they are a national government, and they receive obviously a large diversity of different sources. Some are from the open source, some are from communities, some are from commercial sources that they've acquired. And after using our technology, which really also means after implementing their own intelligence process and group of intelligence analysts looking at them, I think we saw things happening on, let's say, four layers. The first layer was we saw them able to correlate across sources. Now, this sounds very, let's say, mundane, and that makes complete sense. You can now correlate across sources. But before the tip space occurred, this was a real serious problem. And if you don't have the kind of technology that can extract from, let's say, a piece of text, patterns and names and locations and domain names and references and things like that, and correlate them across all these other sources, it is going to be very, very hard to do that. A very specific part of our technology that allows you to do that in a cool way is, a lot of people attribute APT to different names, right? So this Panda Panda here and Bear Bear there. And you can tell our platform what all those aliases are, and they start to correlate and cluster and create correlations between intelligence that uses the different aliases, for example.
So it can be something as simple as like decluttering different naming conventions across different sources, and that actually gets you somewhere.
Exactly right. The taxonomies used by different vendors spell e-crime differently. Or it sounds very, very mundane, but in most platforms, it means if you search for e-crime with a capital C, it will find e-crime with a capital C and not all the other stuff and tags that other vendors are using. So it sounds so mundane, but it's the details that for an analyst really matter. And so, as you say, decluttering and kind of normalizing it analytically, not just from a data perspective, is one layer of where it really allowed them to see things across campaigns they weren't able to see before. And not even by using super expensive intelligence, by looking at the things coming from their community and from open sources, they were able to find correlations of ABT they weren't able to see before. Then the second layer I found most interesting was they started connecting downstream governments in their process, and they use our platform to do that as a group. And so the competencies and the time on target that these analysts have in another organization can now contribute to the same intelligence picture. So they as well woke up that morning and the system said, hey, there's a new report with these correlations correlating to some class of APT that you care about. And because of his time on target and his experience, he was able to add something to it that only was stuck in his brain. And so it's not just connecting the dots between, let's say, data, but it's also connecting the dots of human analysts being able to contribute to one unified picture. And so the central, let's say, hub of the government could now derive value from being connected to these analysts downstream. And then when you go even further, an abstraction layer down, it was great. Now we have an aggregate picture that is bigger than the aggregate of the sources because we added the human knowledge to it. Now let's see if we can translate it into something actionable. And so one part of their team revolves around how do we, you know, make this giant pool of knowledge actionable in our environment. And so a Yara signature was created to go, let's say, into this kind of cross a feed a construct that they were now seeing, and they deployed the Yara in their constituency base through some sort of endpoint tool, which was modular, let's say, unlike EDR, being able to plug in your own knowledge in their detection tool, and some things lit up. So for them and for us, it was a great example of like every layer of the story was being touched, from, you know, the mundane data correlation to connecting the human and their workflow to going beyond the IOCs to actually getting and deriving value out of it, which was great.
Now, I mean, you're talking about governments, whole of government stuff, constituent agencies. I mean, what sort of scale are we talking about? I mean, how do you even begin to measure the size of an environment once you start dealing with, once you've got constituent agencies, once you've got maybe some ICS people over here and huge network fleets of Windows devices over there? Like, how do you even begin to say what is big and what is not? Do you measure it in the number of endpoints? Do you measure it in the number of people who are dealing with the data? And that might be an interesting way to think of it from my point of view, is that really what you've got here is an analysis tool that helps you to deliver actionable information to constituent parties. And those constituent parties are humans. So perhaps one way to measure the complexity of the environment isn't to look at the amount and different types of data that are coming in, but to look at the number of people that it's going out to. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, no, I think you're hitting a beautiful, beautiful note there. And it really is those two axes, right? It's the how large is the diversity of external sources you have to, let's say, make a unified picture of as an organization and institutionalize, and then to what extent do you have to translate that into what diversity of downstream processes? And then, I mean, the government example feels big, but you can go down into a normal large enterprise with subsidiaries. They're going to have 20, 30 different individual teams downstream in the security organization that have to do something with intelligence: vulnerability management, red teaming, risk of this subsidiary, a SOC of that subsidiary, a managed SOC of their partner, and so forth. And so it's tracking and mapping who they are, understanding what it is their information need is from the perspective of cyber threat, delivering it to them on a consistent basis, tracking to make sure they're actually doing it and incorporating it into their analysis and in their daily action is where the value is derived. And for that, you obviously need tooling for analysts and the workflow to do that and the integration to do that. But exactly as you say, the name of the game is not being the best at understanding cyber threat, but being the best in translating it into something of value of process owners that do something across the security landscape in a large enterprise or an MSS or the government or critical infrastructure. Mm. Doesn't really matter.
Do you have competitors, you know, direct competitors in this space?
The TIP space, Threat Intel Platforms, there are about five or six of them if you read the, let's say, Gartner reports. And everybody is trying to find their spot in the market a little bit. But as we position it as really to focus on let's say, beyond the IOC, into the context, into report writing, into disseminating words and not just technical things, although both are important, we see very little of that apart from us.
And where are the others focusing, do you think? Are they trying to focus more on the detection component or...?
I think so, yeah. It's the aggregation of knowledge that allows you to detect better and the qualification really like, of the IOCs that goes with that.
You know, I mean, your pitch really sounds more like this is a management tool than this is a automatically detect badness on a network tool, which is how a lot of the rhetoric coming out of the sort of, you know, the TIP platforms, I mean, that seems to be their rhetoric. Install our stuff and we'll find this for you and it'll ping off and you'll get an alert. Whereas this seems very much more about, well, no, we can slice it, dice it, make it actionable. You can send this chunk of info to these people, that chunk of info to those people. Is it a genuinely different approach? I mean, you know, be as frank as you'd like.
I think so. And to the credit of our space, I think we all agree that context is required around an IOC to make it productive in its goal of detecting or preventing something. We're definitely not alone in that, and I won't position it like that. The nuance perhaps is the extent of which you can create this contextual picture, model knowledge, write, you know, unstructured reporting around it for different consumers and slice and dice it downstream, almost if you're building, you know, different newsletters for, you know, different types of constituents. I think that's...
it's about providing context outside of the group that's actually using the tool, right?
Exactly right. And bringing them back into the story, I think... maybe this goes a little bit too far, but intelligence has gone through an amazing transformation after 9/11 around what the industry calls target-centric analysis, which is many people look at the same picture and there's no handoff anymore as to speed up the process of intelligence. And so by disseminating information to, let's say, a vulnerability team or a risk team that can go back into the platform and contribute their knowledge to the same picture is of immense value. It's not a manager of IOCs that are sent out to a place and who knows if they're used or not. It's really about bringing people into the conversation and using their knowledge to contribute to the wider picture. Therefore, you get better at understanding, detecting, preventing, structuring, and so forth and so forth. So it's a lot about connecting the dots in data, but also the dots across your, let's say, process landscape and human landscape as much as anything else.
Champagne security. nice stuff. That's a bit of a callback to it. It's a really obscure reference that some Australians will get, but I'll leave that in. Now, I believe you've got some criticisms of the sort of IOC industry. I'm not going to call it the intelligence industry, the IOC industry that you'd like to share.
When I was heading Intel at FireEye Eyesight in 2009 or something like that, we were the first or among the first to commercially do intelligence. Now there's, you know, 100 plus intelligence suppliers, and the number seems not to be slowing down. We're kind of more enter the market every day, which is creating increased specialization, which is driving consolidation from a supply chain perspective, let's say. And so I would encourage anybody through our Fusion Center or anything else to really think about, you know, if this is my budget, how do my requirements best translate into what portfolio of sources? And I think the process by which you can get through the marketing of the market and into what the real capabilities and specializations are, because if you just market your specialization, you're not going to get the kind of revenue that most of these companies need. And so they need to market broadly, but their specialization often is very narrow because of this growing, let's say, supply. And I think it will be an increasing problem. And we try and help our customers with that, but it will be an increasing problem in the market that we simply can't see the forest through the trees anymore from all these suppliers. And so platforms are one solution, but I think, you know, process and understanding how to understand your own requirements and translate that back into what you need from the market and the flexibility to change your mind every year, let's say in contracting, is something I would recommend everybody to think about, not just the technology enablement of it, because technology is only going to be as valuable as the human on top and the sources that you connect to it.
I'm curious too, like how that works, right? Because you're able to take all of these, you know, multiple feeds from multiple providers and sort of crunch them. And, you know, I'm wondering how you sort of handle the copyright and the IP of that, because say you've got some government department, you know, some government is using your product and say this department's using this particular IOC feed, this other department's using this one. Can you then use both of those feeds like in your platform at a macro level, or can you only use those IOCs against that data set and these IOCs against that? Like, how does that even work?
No doubt anybody consuming any intelligence needs a license to it. So one part of the service offered is the unification of the legal side. Right? So if a customer wants to buy a portfolio of sources, we ensure that the legalities of that are normalized in a way where any organization can manage a very, very large amount of sources without having to go through 20 procurement cycles or something like
that. So you've turned this into a tick the box, kind of like, which ones do you want?
I wish it was a ticket box, but it will become a ticket box for now. It's a legal team doing it on behalf of our customers, but
yeah, right.
It's growing up to be a ticket box indeed.
And do you give them advice? I mean, you were referring to specializations, right? And about how most of them have mm-hmm. specializations, but market broadly in a way to sort of stay afloat, right? And that makes so much sense. I think that was, you know, that was very interesting. Do you give advice to certain customers based on, well, we think you should get these ones, but those ones probably not worth it for you?
Exactly right. So one part is let's say the neutral perspective of, if these are your requirements, this is what best fits your budget, and give them honest feedback in terms of the height of your budget is great or too high or too low in order to accomplish your goal, which seems to resonate. But the other side is also the lifecycle management then that comes after, because the moment you contract with, let's say, 10 parties, even if they're small parties, you're gonna have some vendor management there, you're gonna have to do some quality assurance there, you're gonna have to, after, let's say, 9 months, sit with the customer and say, you know, who's really gave you the value of your money, and maybe we want to swap one or two people out that weren't contributing to the problem you were having, or the problem you're having is changing or something like that. So it's both it's also the productization of the process by which you determine your requirements and reevaluate your sources.
So it's not like you can, you know, say you're with a government agency that's tasked with protecting certain departments. It's not like you can just, you know, use the license from one of those lower departments and apply it to them. You sort of want to get an individual license at the point of use on your platform.
Absolutely right. And the platform does understand constructs like license and watermarking and things like that. So you can, in our platform, say if multiple organizations contribute together, then only this subset of organizations can see this and that subset of organizations can see that.
Oh, you can do that. Yeah, cool.
Specific to us is we can chain our platform with, you know, data diodes in between and DMZs and networks in between. So you can actually synchronize subsets into other places that again fuse with their own classified data, for example. And so the mechanisms by which you segregate data out for different humans is a core part of what it means to work with government, and therefore also how we can control the intellectual property a little bit. But no doubt you have to license intelligence before you can use it. We're not in the world of redistribution for free.
Joep Homers, thank you very much for joining us on the Soapbox to talk really about this, you know, this tool and platform that you've built, which is designed to collect intelligence. It's been really interesting. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
That was Joep Homers of Eclectic IQ there. I do hope you found that interesting. Do check out eclecticiq.com if you're one of the large organizations that could benefit from their gear, or one of the high-risk organizations that actually does have an externally focused threat intelligence team on staff. And that is it for this edition of the Soapbox Podcast. I'll be back in a couple of days with the regular weekly show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.